This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's program comes to On Location from California, Louisiana, and Virginia. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. Mary Ellen Keeley hosts today's episode and is joined by Sean Edwards, program planner from the Sacramento County Child Support Services, and Gabrielle Brown Morgan, the project director for the Responsible Parenting Grant with the Louisiana Department of Children and Family Services. They discuss their projects with a federal demonstration grant that involves 15 states and two tribes. Their conversation centers around the goal to educate and motivate teens and young adults to postpone parenthood until after they complete their education, start a career, and engage in a committed relationship. And just a heads up, keep an ear out for the upcoming episode 2 of this series. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Another episode of NCIA On Location, coming to you from California, Louisiana, and Virginia. Today, I'm pleased to have two guests new to the NCIA podcast, and I'm Mary Ellen with Virginia Child Support in Crozet, Virginia. Sean, would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely, Mary Ellen. My name is Sean Edwards. I'm a program planner for Sacramento County Child Support in California, and I am part of our program performance and analysis team, responsible for a wide range of duties from grant work, administrative oversight, reports, and several projects.
And Gabby, will you introduce yourself?
Good afternoon. I am Gabrielle Brown Morgan, Project Director for the Responsible Parenting Grant for the Louisiana Department of Children and Family Services. I'm also the collaborative creator of the ESGI curriculum, Educate, Stimulate, Graduate Initiative, and I am extending the warmest of greetings from the Red Stick State. We are a state that is passionate about food, family, and football.
I think I could probably spend most of the podcast talking about all of those items, Gabby. But we're here to talk about, based on the title, here to talk about a federal demonstration grant that's currently being managed by 15 states and two tribes. The goal of this three-year demonstration is to educate and motivate teens and young adults to postpone parenthood until after they complete their education, start a career, and engage in a committed relationship. OCSS awarded grants in two phases, the first being in August of 2020, and then secondly, in July of 2021, and the recipients from Cohort 2 will work with Cohort 1 to learn best practices and receive technical assistance as they plan and implement their programs. Our guests today, along with myself and my role in Virginia, are all part of Cohort 2. So now that we all know each other a little bit better and know about the project, let's jump right in. So Sean, would you tell me a little bit about your project?
Yeah, absolutely. So the education that we're developing and going to start rolling out as early as next month is leaning heavily on the sequence planning part of life. We have a lot of curriculum on healthy relationships, importance of education, budgeting and finance, goal setting, conflict resolution and communication, implications of becoming a parent too early, and child support laws, resources, among other topics. Most of these we chose through needs assessments. Our target audience are youth between the ages of 13 and 19 years old, and we're doing a peer facilitation model. So we're training teens around the same age to be providing the facilitation for these trainings and curriculum to ensure it is well received by our target audience. So we are partnered with Boys and Girls Club of Greater Sacramento. They're going to be performing the interventions. We have between 170 to 180 students on board. And we're partnering with MEF and Associates for our evaluation of the program and a local video firm, Accelerated Video, to do some video marketing with us as well as record some of the interventions. As a father of two kids myself, ages 10 and 14, I know the importance of setting children up for success as early as possible and hope our program does that with our audience. With my experience, I have about 12 years experience with Child Support Services as a caseworker, as a supervisor, and now as a manager. So I know a lot about the aspects of child support from the caseworker all the way up to management level experience. So I'm looking forward to implementing my own experience in child support with the curriculum as well.
Excellent. Thank you, Sean. You know, I've worked on grants for a while now, and I found that the most successful folks usually have a little bit of child support experience in their background. You can run grants without it for sure, but those of us that have kind of been in the weeds with it have a different perspective, and I'm excited to see how your project turns out. So, Gabby, can you tell me a little bit about your project?
So the Educate, Stimulate, and Graduate initiative is a curriculum designed to target ages 13 to 21 in various settings. That could be schools, community groups, churches, even junior colleges. We're looking to engage young people where they have an opportunity to be in conversations about choices and the skills that are required to be good parents. The curriculum itself consists of 8 modules that can be facilitated in any order, depending on the needs of the groups we are working with. The only module that must be a part of the facilitation piece is child support. The curriculum is created to be administered in person with the use of stimulating activities and technology to foster the discussion and get everyone engaged and involved. We are currently moving into the branding and implementation phases for this grant, and the curriculum is actually going to be being piloted this year in Iberville Parish and in Orleans Parish. As you all know, here in Louisiana, we have parishes instead of counties. So that's the big thing about us using the word parish. So basically, overall, we're just looking to touch as many of our young people throughout the state of Louisiana over the duration of the grant. But our two pilot audiences will be Iberville Parish and Orleans Parish. One is a very rural parish and the other one is a very urban parish. And we just want to get some ideas back from both of those.
Excellent. So, Gabby, what are you most excited about for your project?
Well, I'm most excited about just really engaging young people in their voice. Louisiana, as most people know, it is this eclectic blend of individuals here, but it tends to lend itself to a very conservative tone when we talk about the needs of our young people in the state of Louisiana. And I think that this curriculum is definitely a vehicle where we can give our young people a choice. We can give our young people a voice. And we can just talk about choices. I mean, overall, I want to empower our up and coming, you know, leaders in the state of Louisiana. And I think that this actual curriculum is a good tool to do that. So I'm just excited about all of the ways and avenues that the state will be able to utilize the curriculum post us implementing it in these two different parishes.
Awesome. How about you, Sean? What are you most excited about?
A lot of things that that Gabby mentioned, actually. So thank you for sharing that, Gabby. So the name of our grant is My Empowerment Grant. And a lot of things that Gabby mentioned about wanting to empower the youth and young adults to make them successful in life, or at least help them be successful. So I'm definitely excited to reach the youth, provide the education that they may not be receiving in their regular schooling or even in their households. I'm also excited to see the results from the interventions, measure the effectiveness of our curriculum, and just see the statistics after. Since a lot of my job works around statistics, it's like, okay, let me see the facts. And we're going to be doing pre and post interviews and assessments to see how much of our curriculum stuck with the youth and what we need to tweak before moving forward.
So we talked about what we're excited about. Being project managers, there's always that risk mitigation. Sean, what are you most worried about?
Yeah, so my biggest worry is that our program is not as effective as I hope for. I do have really high standards for this and really hoping it does go very well. But my biggest worry is it's not effective and the youth feel as though it's a waste of their time. So hopefully I can really get something out there. But that's definitely a biggest worry for me.
How about you, Gabby? What's your biggest concern or worry about your project plan?
Honestly, my biggest worry is actually making sure that people don't categorize this curriculum as some form of sex education. That has no platform in our curriculum. We are definitely focusing and gearing this entire grant and this curriculum along the lines of choices. Choices about whether or not young people even want to become parents. And what do they want their life to look like as parents? So just really engaging them in a conversation and asking them, what do you want for your own future, right? A lot of times adults will, you know, I can even say that as being a parent, we have ideas in our mind about what we would love to see our children do and become. However, I think it's important for us to open those channels of communication and just ask, what do you see yourself doing in 5 years? What do you see yourself doing in 10 years? And just kind of lean into that.
I love that project management skill of like, I asked what you were most worried about and you shared with it, but you still put a spin on the end of like, here's how I'm going to make it better. That's fantastic. So I am a grant project manager myself. And so I really enjoy interviewing my peers, talking about their projects. But it also makes me kind of curious because at least for myself, this grant world is pretty new. So Gabby, is this your first federal demonstration grant project?
This is my first grant project in the aspect of seeing it from the top to the bottom. I do have a history of working in grants, more in a grassroots environment, doing a lot of the boots on the ground type of work, but I definitely have garnered a new respect for looking at it from this angle and seeing some of the challenges and the outcomes. So yeah, it's a work. It's definitely a work. I am excited. I'm excited about all of the things I have to offer from my perspective, as well as, you know, just respecting the work that's done from the federal level down. It's definitely gave me a new appreciation and respect for all of the work that we're doing here.
How about you, Sean? Is this your first federal demonstration grant project?
Yeah, Mary Ellen, this is actually my first federal grant that I've been on. And just like Gabby said, I'm learning a lot, getting an appreciation for the amount of work, the amount of coordination, the amount of organization that goes into a grant of this size. But leveraging my state partners, the federal partners, keeping on track with the monthly report outs and quarterly report outs, it really helps move things along. And also our internal administrators who handle the funding of the grant, you know, making sure that the bills are paid so that our partners continue working with us. Definitely a lot of hands in it, more than I would have known previous to coming onto a grant.
Yeah, definitely. The learning new things part is my favorite part about the work. You know, our federal partners are so supportive and hold our hands and help us navigate some of these complex situations. But trying new things and doing things differently than the way we've always done them, you know, within a government organization can be a challenge. And I certainly enjoy that part of what we do within these grant projects. So back to our specific projects, Gabby, what do you hope to accomplish? Like, what is the definition of success for your project for you?
So at this point in the juncture, I just hope to meet the federal guidelines and standards for creation, facilitation, and implementation of the curriculum. You know, I'm keeping it fairly simple at this particular point as I grow in this game. And I would define my success as communities and groups eventually actually seeking out the curriculum to be implemented into their programs long after I exist here in the agency in this capacity. So those are basically my goals that I'm hoping to accomplish. And for me, success is just creating a product that people can use even after I'm no longer here. That's my gain and goal. I want it to outlive me. And it'd be something that can literally be a trajectory maybe for some of the other departments here at the agency. They can even use it as a tool, or we can figure out ways to tweak it and to make it better and make it stronger. And, you know, just let it be, let it live its own legacy. That's my hopes.
Excellent. So how about you, Sean? How are you defining success, or what are you hoping to accomplish?
So to me, success and accomplishment of this program and curriculum will be reaching the audience, having them learn some life lessons that will carry them through adulthood. Also to show them that child support isn't a scary agency. There's so many bad reputation things out there about child support. And we want to show that we are truly here to help them, but we need their help in return. And just as Gabby mentioned, the whole legacy aspect of it, I would hope and wish that this program can live past my time here, and we can reach as many youth as possible. and really make this a standing curriculum, if not with Boys and Girls Club, and then with other agencies or school districts, or just really give one piece of advice to youth out there that they'll remember, like when they were 14 years old, they heard this one piece. So when they're 24 years old, setting a goal or looking at their financial future, they're like, you know what? I remember this from the My Empowerment Grant. So yeah, that's success for me.
So was there anything that I should ask you that I didn't know enough to ask? Like anything you either of you wanted to share about your projects that my questions didn't prompt you to discuss today?
I guess I can chime in a little bit. I guess my question would have been, when did your personal journey begin advocating for parents? That's a question that I would want to answer here on the podcast. I love to share with people a little bit about me in the aspect of I have the lived experience of having been a teenage parent. And I had technically all of the tools that people would feel like you would need to make best choices. I came from a two-parent household, mom and dad. They gainfully employed. Private schooling, a little mix of public schooling, good friends, good peers. But there is just that one part of where I think as teenagers, we kind of wanted to be unicorns to make you all kind of understand that we think we're invincible when we're teenagers, right? We see things happening, it's advertised, we're told, but it was just taught to me at that time in such a way where it was like, oh, they're just talking about that on TV. They're just talking about that over there. I think people shielded a lot of the conversation from me when I was growing up. And so when I was really faced with a decision of, is this a decision that can alter the course of my life? Meaning not that I can't be successful, because I do feel like I am successful. However, I could have gotten there a lot faster had I not had to actually bring a family along on that journey. And I could have provided different things for my oldest son, you know, because there are differences. With the things that I was able to do for my oldest son, as opposed to my three younger children, who at that time, they came along when I was a lot more in tune with where I wanted to be as an adult. So I think for me, that's really where part of that advocacy for me started. I mean, I don't know where the footage is, but I can remember being 16 and going to the legislature and having to advocate for my high school to get an actual child care center. This had to be like 1995, 96, something like that. And never in my mind did I think I was being an advocate, or that I had this activism spirit within me. But that's definitely where the light bulb turned on, that A, people that are making decisions about my future don't look anything like me. I mean, it was just a sea of faces. And I mean, there was maybe one or two nestled in the crowd that actually looked like me. And I locked in on this set of eyes and I just told my story. And I didn't even benefit from the child care, but needless to say, the next year, my high school, after I graduated, we were able to actually get a successful daycare. We've had some changes in legislation since then and funding. So since that time, that daycare no longer exists. But I would hope that in the near future, they would think about putting it back in place, because child care is just absolutely necessary. Students, working parents, you must have, you know, good child care. And so for me, advocacy, that whole activism spirit and believing in the power of our youth, I think it actually started for me as a teen parent. So, yeah.
You know, Gabby, I ask that question a lot when I do podcasts, and I have to say that it's probably my most favorite answer that anyone has ever given about what I should ask that I didn't know enough to.
Thank you.
So I want to be fair to my other guests. Sean, did you have anything else that you wanted to add, or anything that I didn't know enough to ask about you or share about your project?
So I'm going to continue the conversation and the question that Gabby started. That's actually a really good question about parent advocacy. So I'm going to go ahead and answer her question, if that's okay. So I would say my advocacy for around the same vein, probably in my mid to late 20s. So I've lived the life of a non-custodial parent. And so I know the benefits and challenges of navigating a child support system early on without knowing anything about the laws or the regulations. And I actually started with child support years after I became a non-custodial parent. And just learning the importance of like co-parenting, how important that is in raising a child, and trying to provide some knowledge that I learned over the years, like lessons learned when I was a caseworker, to individuals I would talk to on the phone or over email And even as a supervisor and at management level, I try to see things from an outside perspective. You know, if I was on the outside of this agency and this was happening to me, how would it make me feel without taking it personally, but just keeping that global mindset of how things we do affect other people. So my advocacy probably started around then, not as early as Gabby. Definitely applaud to Gabby for doing that at such a young age, to be a teenager and going in front of a legislator like that to advocate for program, just hats off. My answer is not going to come anywhere close to hers, but I definitely want to give you a special shout out for that from my perspective. So tying that in with the program, it's just providing those life experiences. You know, this is what to expect if you were to have a child, the relationship doesn't work out. These are things you need to keep in mind. You know, it's the child cannot be part of, it can't be collateral damage from a relationship that did not work out. You know, you can't be using child as a middle person for communication. You have to be able to communicate directly with the other parent. Of course, you know, no other laws or restraining orders in between that would affect that, but still you wouldn't use a child as a communication vessel in that same vein. So yeah, definitely hoping to instill that in these youth, and they can take that carrying forward, because not every relationship works out.
I am super excited to see what comes out of both of your projects, along with all the other grantee sites, hoping to have some conversations with them in the future. And I'm hoping that the two of you might accept an invitation, future one, to come back and chat with me some more about the things that have come up in conversation today outside of the grant. You guys both have really unique perspectives, and I'm curious to dig a little bit deeper on that. But on behalf of the podcast team, I want to thank you both for joining us today for another episode of NCIA On Location. Speak with us and share a little bit about yourselves. We also want to thank you for all that you've done in the child support grant community, as well as what you do for NCIA. Thank you for our listeners for joining us today. I'm Mary Ellen Keeley, and this has been NCIA On Location.
On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCIA Communications Committee, with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.